obviously be having a connection there with a family member or friend, but oftentimes not knowing anyone. And I, for this project, I wanted to create a project that had the potential of empowering women through the process of sharing their life experiences with each other and through the process of participating in the project.
Okay, as one of the participants in Kingston with Shira's project, I was initially introduced to this project by one of my friends who's in the same department as Cheryl.
Please.
Okay. Although I'm not an immigrant to Canada, I have been living in Canada for about 3 years as an international student in Queen's University. And I had also been living in several different places in Kingston, a city which witnessed my growth during this international journey. So I felt that I probably had something to share with the other female immigrants, according to my own experience. But honestly, I hadn't expected the vast and long-lasting influence that this project brought about, because we started this project last June, so, and ended in about July, so it has been over 1 year. And Cheryl has been giving presentations and making photo exhibitions in various places, and we have all also been interviewed by several leaders in Kingston, as you can see from this poster.
We have some posters up here of some media coverage we had in Kingston.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really very happy that this project didn't end up at a very personal level where a pure academic base and has already brought about some social and maybe political influence.
Okay. So, just to talk a bit more about the project in the sense of who the participants were, there was a 13 different countries from which women had immigrated. You can see the list of them up here. The age range was between 24 and 49 years of age at the time of immigration. Length of time in Canada varied. Some were relatively new, between 4 months and 46 years. The majority of women had been in Canada for under 5 years. There were 18 women who participated in total, and 10 of the women had been in Canada for less than 5 years. Also, you can see that the research participants were highly educated. 16 out of 18 participants had at least one university degree. Some had been obtained in their countries of origin. Some had been obtained here, somewhere in the process. Okay. So there were two research sites, one in Peterborough, which took place here at the New Canadian Centre, and one in Kingston, which Miao will talk a little bit more in a few minutes. But both of the sites were chosen specifically because they are inclusive locations that go out of their way to welcome newcomers and also very supportive of projects that seek to learn more about newcomers and more about women and their experiences. Immigration status of participants: 3 women had originally came as refugees, 11 came under the family or skilled worker class, and 4 women had originally came as international students. Okay, language ability. At the time the research project took place, all women were able to communicate very well in English, although not everyone was happy with sort of the level that they were at. They wanted to improve. And another variable is the fact that 16 of the 18 women who participated were visible minorities. And just to sort of clarify what that term means, it's a government term originally sort of enacted in 1986 around the Employment Equity Act that came out. So it's basically, it's a government term used to describe individuals who are individuals other than Aboriginals who are not white.
As one of the participants in Kingston, I'm just going to give a very brief introduction of myself. I came from mainland China in September 2004, right after I finished my undergraduate studies in China, to go to Queen's University for my master's degree in French department. And after I finished my master's degree, I decided to stay in Kingston and continue my PhD. So I'm currently enrolled as a PhD student in French department at Queen's University.
So a little bit more about the methodology of the project. There were information sessions held in each city, which gave a chance for potential participants to come and find out about the project, find out what it was about, see if, you know, if they wanted to participate. Also, it gave women an opportunity to ask questions of me and to meet other potential participants. Sorry about that. There were individual interviews with each participant, and there were questionnaires that were followed for each one of the interviews. There were also a series of focus groups with each group of participants. And in the focus groups, we used a methodology called PhotoVoice, which is something I'll explain a little bit more in a couple of minutes. There was also a mapping exercise that we used. And I'll also explain that a little bit more shortly. Photography exhibitions, something that Miao had alluded to earlier, that was part of the research process, was putting together a display of the photographs that were created by the participants to show to the public in public presentations. So, as I said, to describe PhotoVoice, it's a research method that uses participant-generated photographs to explore different themes. So this method is a unique and valuable tool for exploring women's experiences, emotions, and perceptions through a visual medium, in the case of this project. So PhotoVoice is designed to meet three primary goals, which you see up on the screen. So it is meant to be an empowering experience. One of the ways in which it does this is by placing participants' experiences and their interpretations of their experiences at the forefront of the research process. So participants sort of highlight what is important, what we should be talking about. It's designed as a method that builds participants' collective knowledge. So not only do I learn from participants, but they learn from each other. And then the public can learn from us as well. And it also can be a really effective tool for informing broader society. So although we don't have the photographs here, there are some posters just outside the door there. And the way that the photographs worked were there were participant quotes attached to each photograph. So when you looked at the image, you didn't just see the image and get to imagine what it meant. You actually looked at the image and saw what it meant for the participant. So photographs then shared in the group became the theme from which we launched our discussions. Okay? So there were a range of topics, such as an exploration of women's places of safety. So where did women feel safe and why? Places where women felt comfortable or fearful or vulnerable, and what was happening in those places to create those feelings. Where were participants able to experience feelings of inclusion and belonging? And what places reminded women of their first days in Kingston or Peterborough, depending on the process, depending on the site. So women would take turns showing the photographs in the group, describe what the photograph meant for them, and then discussions would come out of that. So sometimes, you weren't quite sure when you started the group what kind of discussions were going to be happening. So it was really quite a fascinating process. Maybe Miao can tell us a little bit more what it was like for her.
Mm-hmm. There we go. The next two slides, so this one is the outside of the Berai Center where we had the focus group discussion in Kingston. Berai Center is kind of like a special center for female mature grad students in Queen's University. And the next picture is the picture that we took inside of the Mirror Center after one of the focus group with some of the participants in Kingston. This is kind of a comparison of the feeling that I had by participating in this focus group. Because I didn't have chance to attend the information session that Cheryl held for the meeting of the other participants. So right after the individual interview with Cheryl, the first time when I entered the focus group was actually the first time that I met with the other participants. And for me, I think honestly, I feel a little bit uneasy sharing my personal and emotional feelings in front of all the strangers, because Cheryl and the other friend were the only person that I knew in that focus group. And I had never been to Mirror Center before. But I have to say, Sherry is a very good organizer. She's very good at creating a very comfortable atmosphere. And she purposely chose specific topics for each focus group so that we can have specific topics to talk on. And also, I think it's because all the participants had been the newcomers to this country, so we shared the experience of how to adapt to the environment in this new country and how to try to let ourselves be accepted by the people in this country. And also, we are all females who were very good at noticing the change of the innermost feeling of our heart, and also very good at sharing the experiences and expressing our feelings. The other thing that I need to mention is the photo voice that Cheryl explained a little bit, the role of the photo voice in the focus group for me. For me, here I kind of chose three slides here. The pictures to express our emotions. The first one here I call Lifestyle in Kingston. So that's the picture that I took, the outside of one of the houses that I used to stay in Kingston for about 1 year and a half, with a German lady of the age about 70 years old. So I think this house is kind of very good complementary part for my life here in Canada as an international student, because staying in this house can give me a feeling of domestic life. And also the German lady was kind of like my grandmother, so that reminded me of a family feeling that I'm lacking of actually in Canada. And also the German lady was originally from Germany, so she moved to Canada at the age of 10. So we kind of like have a similar experiences of how to adapt to this new country and the culture and everything. The next picture that I chose here, women's way of expressing emotions, is the picture of Ontario Lake. I think this part is kind of important for many of the Kingstonians and also for the newcomers to this city, because it's a very good way to connect to the nature. And personally for me, Ontario Lake has another symbolic feelings for me, as just as Ontario Lake separated Wolf Island from the downtown area of Kingston, back in my home country, I was living by the Yangtze River for about 20 years. It has been the Yangtze River which separated the countryside from the main city. So it's kind of like the similar city spell that reminded me back of my life back in China. And the third picture is a picture of the sky that I took. I'm not going to clarify or interpret it how this picture brought me the idea of the feeling of positive feelings of belonging and comfort. As you can see from outside the posters that Cheryl brought today, I noticed that for some of the female participants, when Cheryl asked us to choose some pictures to show the places of comfort, vulnerability, whatever, instead of choosing the pictures of very specific locations in the two cities of Kingston or Peterborough, some of the participants chose the pictures like, for me, the sky, or some other participants chose the picture of a bench, or maybe a spoon, or maybe just some chickens. It's very common objects that you can see everywhere, but it's these common objects that brought you a special feeling, and it's this shared feeling that brought us together that kind of connect the participants and help us to understand each other better, because we share many of the emotions as female immigrants in many different perspectives. So I have to say, photo voice really had been a very good way to connect all the participants in the focus group.
Okay, so some of the positive places that were identified for participants in both cities, first and foremost, perhaps, was immigrant service agencies, because that was a place where that women knew right away they could go and find someone who understood what they were going through. The waterfront was a really prominent theme as well. There was almost all participants showed at least one photograph of the water. There was maybe one or two who didn't bring in a water photo, but the water was a really prominent theme. Libraries in Kingston and Peterborough, also the International Center in Kingston, and generally places where women felt included and safe, welcome and supported. So where you would be, you know, you could walk in and you could talk to someone who, if maybe they couldn't understand you right away, they would take the time to, okay, can you repeat that word, and they and try to figure it out together. So places that where people were patient and understanding. Some of the places, and I've highlighted them in colors here for Peterborough, where women felt safe or not safe. Green means safe and comfortable. Red means unsafe or vulnerable. There were certain places, certain city streets, sometimes downtown locations, where women had generally had bad experiences, and that's what made them feel unsafe. Either they had personally had bad experiences, or they had witnessed other people having bad experiences. And so then that place thereafter became identified as being unsafe. We also did the same in Kingston, and this map's a little bit different with the faces, but we were, one thing this map was looking at was the center of the circle of mobility for international students as compared to immigrants, with international students being a much smaller circle of mobility, which I would argue probably if a study was conducted here that would be the same for international students at Trent. Their area in which they move is much smaller. I just want to make sure that I'm covering everything here. So basically, if I can just briefly describe a little bit, like the mapping exercise, what women had done is they'd each taken a map home with them, and over a 1 week period, they kept track of where they went, what they did, and what the experience was like in that place, in the sense of how did it make them feel. And then at the next focus group, they brought the maps back, shared with the group, according to colors, red, green, and yellow, how the places made them feel. And then out of these maps, I then made other maps that showed generally where the places that women had identified as creating positive and sort of negative feelings.
So when Cheryl asked us to do the mapping exercise to kind of track the places of mobility, I found that the Queen's University main campus map kind of covered the basic places that I go to on a daily basis. So just to explain a little bit more, the first red point near number two, that's Kingston Hall, where my department locates. Thanks, Cheryl. And number 13, that's Queen's University University Center, where locates the cafeteria. We can have casual meals during the daytime. And also I do my part-time job, on-campus part-time job in the International Student in International Center as a student staff. And across the street, number 82, that's Stauffer Library, where I do study reading, where I can borrow books. And a little bit to the north, that's the place where I live. So it takes only about 10 minutes for me to go to the four different places, so they are very close to each other. However, on the left-hand side, on top, I used a star, red star, to mark Queen's West campus. That's the only place of vulnerability that I can remember as really impressive experiences, because I had twice. The first one is the bus negative experience that I had on the bus. Actually, I didn't have a chance to get on the bus, which I'm going to cover at a later time. And the other is the first year when I came to Queens, I had a bad experience by some local kids at the age of 10 throwing stones to me and another friend who was from Korea. So I was assuming that because we were visible minorities that they kind of had a very negative and unwelcoming attitude toward us. So from this map, it kind of gave me the idea that the closer that I stay on campus, the safer that I feel. In the next slide, this is a picture inside of the Stauffer Library where I do my studies, and I kind of also cited several of the places that I call as positive places. The first one, libraries on campus, as I'm being a student there. And the second one, the department, well, I'm doing my degree in the department with my supervisor, and I also teach French lessons to the undergraduate students as a teaching fellow. Third place is the International Center, where I work as an on-campus student staff. So this kind of covered all my identities in Canada as an international student or part-time worker. However, when I'm off-campus, I'm just maybe a stranger to this city, a small-sized city, which is pretty much a white city. And for me, I'm Asian-looking and visible minority. I felt I'm more likely to be excluded by the smaller cities in Canada. In the next few slides, I think Sherry is going to cover more on the topic of visible minorities.
Yes. So, many of the women who participated in this project felt that they had been discriminated against because they were born outside of Canada and because they were visible minorities. And it wasn't, it was more than just a feeling, although a feel, you know, the way that they felt was, you know, valid enough. But it was words that were said by other people. Like it wasn't, you know, I don't think it can be passed off as, well, women were just misinterpreting what people said, or, you know, maybe they took it the wrong way. But there were some very overt racist comments that were directed towards women. But there were a whole range of experiences that women had. If you want to think of it on a scale from mild to severe, milder examples perhaps being where women were ignored in stores or other social settings, or even if in stores sometimes women were followed around, you know, because they looked out of place according to the person who was working there. Other, as we go along the continuum, strangers making derogatory comments, whether walking along the street or from passing cars. Now, this could be strangers who were children, as in the case with the children throwing rocks, or it could be adults. It could be when I looked back at the data, like I discovered that if women had discriminatory experiences with other women, it was always one-on-one. But if there were males involved, it could be more than one. It could be two, or it could be a group. It was like they didn't sort of try to hide the fact that they were saying negative things. So almost, and you can read into that what, I mean, that's something that needs research more, but I thought that was kind of a fascinating finding. Also being treated rudely by people at the front line of social agencies. That was something that women identified as being something that made women feel really badly about themselves or their capabilities, whether it's language or even, you know, the way they were dressing, people making comments. And then severe as one of the experience that Mia said of having people throwing rocks at them, yelling racialized comments, being threatened in public places, and being subjected to discriminatory behavior on city buses, which is something I will get into shortly. But as you can see up on the screen, visible minority women are more visible in smaller cities, smaller medium-sized cities, because the population of smaller cities is less ethnically diverse. So I don't know if any of you recall the stats that came out earlier this year, a few months ago, in terms of the number of visible minorities in Peterborough, according to percentage. by StatsCan was 2.6% of the population in Peterborough and 5.8% of the population in Kingston.
So, again, just to talk about the places of vulnerability, we talked about the city streets. In the summer, women felt more vulnerable than other times of the year. Maybe because there's more people around, there's more, you know, there's more people to say bad things. And also, just they're more visible because it's summer. They're not bundled up in big winter parkas. City buses and bus stops. Tim Hortons was a really prominent theme as a place where women had bad experiences. Hospitals, other government agencies like the Ministry of Transportation. Shopping malls and grocery stores. And again, in social settings where women felt excluded, ignored, or marginalized. So, places where there's more, in some cases, it's like places where there's more people, there's more chance to be discriminated against. But, you know, sometimes like at the city bus stop, maybe you'd be the only one standing there. And we'll hear more about what can happen in that situation. And then Miao will introduce that now.
In one of the focus groups, I accidentally studied the example of the bad experience that I had on, not on the bus, but close to the bus. It was one example that I had the first year when I came to Canada. After I had a dinner party at a friend's house, I was about to take the bus to go back home. It was pretty late. And it was very cold outside because it was winter, so I kind of stayed inside of the building, which was like about 10 meters away from the bus station. So I was watching through the window when the bus was about 20 meters away from me. I ran out of the entrance to catch the bus. I was pretty sure the bus driver saw me, but he just ignored it and then drove away. So I had to wait for another 30 minutes to wait for the next bus. And again, the same situation happened, and again. So it was really a very bad experience that I had. And after I studied this example, some of the other participants in the focus group kind of recalled their similar experiences that they had taking the bus.
Yeah, for example, SK related her experience. I had a bad experience on the bus a few months ago. And this was on the bus, so this case SK had actually gotten on the bus. Some days SK wears a headscarf, and the driver treated me so badly because I didn't read the transfer after being given it. I just went to the back of the bus and sat down. So just to clarify, what had happened is SK had asked the driver for a transfer, and the driver demanded to know why. Why do you need a transfer? She explained why and said, well, I think I need a transfer, don't I? And the bus driver said, well, you should know the rules. You should read the back. SK said, well, if I'm breaking a rule, just let me know. You know, I'm not doing it on purpose. And the bus driver again reiterated, go read the back. So SK went to the back of the bus and sat down. But then the driver got up, came to the back of the bus, and started yelling at her, saying, you know, I'm serious, look at the rules. And this interaction went on for, you know, maybe a minute. And as SK says, now I'll never know for sure if that headscarf was the reason, but I imagine that it was. She'd been on the bus other times, wasn't wearing the headscarf, you know, like didn't have that experience. Now there was another woman who shared an experience of witnessing a bad experience on the bus, and this is something that happened here in Peterborough. I was coming to work, and I think at that time it was right around the time that they had changed the bus fares. So there was a woman getting on the bus who looked Asian, maybe Chinese, and she was elderly. And when she came to pay, she had the $1.75 and went to put it in, but they changed the fare the night before and she wasn't aware of this. And so the driver said $2, and the woman couldn't really understand, but then he started yelling at her. And he said, you know, $2. If you don't have the $2, then you have to get off the bus. And it's interesting why people think yelling makes you understand better, but I don't know. But as LB said, you know, there have been a couple of experiences
that I've seen like that where people are treated badly. Maybe because of the way they look. So that got us, me thinking more about, okay, what role is a bus operator supposed to play in our society, right? They're supposed to pick us up and take us from point A to point B. So I looked at the website to see what kind of qualifications are up under the job description for a bus operator. So, and this is taken directly from the website, bus operator job description. Requires an enthusiastic individual with a positive attitude. There's the other qualifications of high school graduate or equivalent, clean driver's record, and must have excellent communication skills. So these are very similar in Peterborough and Kingston, what the job description is. But I'm not too sure how that's assessed, what excellent communication skills are, and how that's sort of like tested. And I think there's definitely some room from strategies for improvement. I think sometimes people aren't aware that they're being discriminatory or racist. They're just having a bad day, right? Maybe. Maybe that's one excuse. But it's still no justification for mistreating people. Since the findings have come out, there's been other people who have come to other people I've been consulting with to complain about having bad experiences on the bus. So I think, you know, there's definitely some huge room for improvement, and it would be nice to talk about maybe what some of those improvements could be. Because I just kind of, let's see what the next one is here. That, okay, so this sort of gets us into a different theme, but, you know, like, I think it's one thing, okay, to identify there is a problem, right? And then figuring out what steps we can take to contend with it. We had a series done, well, the WIG Standard in Kingston did a series on the project and on the experiences of immigrant women in Kingston last week, the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. So they had, you know, an interview with me, an interview with Matt Meow, another participant, the director of the Community Health Center in Kingston, the mayor as well. So it's been identified as being a problem, and so now we're trying to, you know, get dialogue going and talk about strategies for dealing with it. So now I'm going to jump into, we can talk about this more if people have questions, but I just sort of wanted to talk about what that was like for women, being able to share things like that in a group. It was something that, you know, each meeting, it's like we were able to talk a little bit better, or women felt safer, or, you know, they could share more things. For example, the CV said, I have been doing a lot of soul searching and trying to get to a point where I would decide something. What I'm saying is, you come to Canada, you have lots of experiences, you feel them, you live them, and it stays with you. But you don't really have the opportunity to take that time to stop and think about what they meant, and which ones were bad or good, or which ones made you happy or sad. So for CV, this was a very enriching experience to be able to look back at her experiences in Canada, and not only feeling it but thinking about it and deciding which ones she was happy with. Also, to get back to that sort of collective knowledge, I think that it is good because you hear other stories, like here, and maybe you will hear of other people's experiences and know that you are not alone. You can tell someone about your bad experience and good experiences too, and maybe you can gather different kinds of information, and then someone else can hear this information, and maybe it will help them. For the women who participated, it was really important that what we learned in our project was shared with other people. And this is sort of the same thing as PK said. I think that usually people think that whenever anything happens to them, that it happens only to them. Like they think, oh, I'm not so lucky, or what is going on? They sort of internalize it, right? But if you hear other people's experiences, I think it makes you feel better.
So just now, just Sherry...
Not quite. Sorry, I'll just go back one. I just wanted to say, reiterate that this... The talking about the buses, the sharing of the information was really one of the most... It was a very provocative discussion that happened during the Photo Voice experiences. And just leading into what Mian's going to share about her benefits of participation, the transit discrimination experience highlights the manner in which one individual concern can have a profound effect on the memories and experiences that are stirred in other listeners and participants. Now it's
your turn. Sherry just now kind of quoted some of the experiences and feelings that some of the other participants are having in terms of sharing experiences. And now I also going to quote the benefits of participation that I gave in the last session of our focus group in another perspective. That's the experience of looking back your life. Because when Cheryl asked us to do like the photo voice, to choose pictures and also to do the mapping exercise, I didn't really purposely take pictures of different places. However, I kind of chose the pictures that I've taken before. And in the process of choosing the pictures that I've taken before, this really given me a very good opportunity to look back the life that I had since the first day that I came to Canada. And I think this looking back to the life in Canada is really a very precious experience for me, because I can then look back and see how much I have grown through this process instead of just focusing on my academic commitment to my department and whatever. And this also helped me to see what are the good qualities that I should keep. And also by communicating with other participants, I got to understand which are the qualities that I need to keep and which are maybe some of the qualities that I need to change and to learn from others. And by looking back into the past, I kind of like have a better adjustment of myself. And also this gives me an idea to see how I'm going to build up my future life in terms of career path and whether I'm going to stay in Canada or move on to continue my international journey or just going back to China. So this gives me a lot of thoughts reflecting on my past experience, which I think is really good and I didn't really have time to think about before.
Okay, so we're sort of getting near the end of the presentation, and just to sort of go back to the findings of the how participants were empowered through the process of discussing their experiences, sharing their photographs with the research and group, and communicating to the public. So being able to voice their experiences and talk about them in a supportive group setting. So the ability to communicate their emotional experiences of place in this supportive group setting allowed women to learn from each other and expand their network of support. So for example, in Kingston, the research group so connected during the process of the research that we're still meeting, even though the research was finished a year ago. Like every few months we get together and have a potluck because they were just so touched by the process of taking part in this project. And, oh yeah, I just have one more here. That frontline staff at social agencies, transit drivers, and all of those employed in the public sector, I think really need to be better educated. I think all of us do, better educated on culturally competent ways in which to interact with Canada's diverse population. I'm not sure if the legislation has come into effect already, but I know it's in the works in terms of accessibility, that current legislation, it's maybe just come into effect, regarding that all frontline staff have to take training around issues of accessibility. I think it would be great if there was something similar in terms of cultural competency, since the racial landscape, if we want to put it that way, of Canada is changing, of Peterborough, of Kingston, of all cities in Canada is changing, then we need to change too, right? So. I think the next one is mine.
So, just as Cheryl's project wasn't really limited on the academic base, and she had the photo exhibitions going on and giving presentations everywhere, I also have some new thoughts after 1 year participating in this project. So at this point of time, I'm thinking of the master's thesis that I gave for my degree in Queen's University. It's kind of using a feminist theory of agency to analyze the female roles in the 17th and 18th century French literature, to kind of observe the process of their changing from passive objects to active subjects in three different perspectives. So the first one is the growth of self-consciousness. The second one is the ability to change their personal life. And the third, to change the society to a certain extent by showing their voice in public space, entering from private space into public space. And so I'm thinking of the female immigrants' identity as double strangers in the society, the first being culturally and politically stranger and foreigner to this new country is Canada. The second is the stranger as being female, a more vulnerable gender proved by the traditional discourse and reality in the society. So being the double stranger in the society, how are we going to react to the real situation? There are several points that I can think of as an international student and also as a female migrant to this country. So the first one probably is the improvement of the language ability. This helps us to build a better communication with the outside world. Then you can speak out and let other people understand what your expectations are and what are the issues and problems going on. This helps to solve the problem and improve the situation. And also the self-adjustment, probably the understanding of the law, regulations, rules, and customers, because we are coming from a different cultural background. So there are many things like cultural atmosphere that you need to adapt into this new environment. And also the third, constant hard working, is based on my own experience and also the experiences from the other immigrants. Some of the degrees and certificates that we gained from our home country are not well recognized here. So we sometimes have to start all over again. This all needs our hard working and also the courage to start over and continue to maybe pursue a new degree and to start a new life in this new environment. And the fourth is to be engaged into related groups and community, the importance of participation. By participating in Shara's group, I felt that sharing experience is really very important, especially in smaller cities like in Kingston or Peterborough, where we don't really have the community of a certain country like the Chinese community or maybe a community of some other foreign countries. So probably we have to need more support from the other agencies or public services. And we have to try to go out and find some related groups that we can find to gain more supports. And even if we have such supports, sometimes we still have to endure the loneliness as being in the smaller cities. On the other hand, I think as female immigrants or international students, we're also expecting some support from outside. So the first one, which is also very important, I call respect as kind of the basic rights we can have as human beings. And the second is the equal opportunities. I think most of the immigrants here would like to, when they have the courage to leave their home country to start all over again, I think they are all very hardworking and also expect a very pleasant life here in this new environment. But sometimes we are not treated equally. And we don't even have equal opportunities based on our past experience. So if we can gain more support in this part, this also helps us to re-establish a new life, a new environment. And also I think the third one is kind of like the ultimate goal that we are dreaming of to have is a home-like environment, safe and comfortable, where we are more like culturally accepted by the new environment, not only by the building of the new policies, but also it's kind of like not only from the country or the government, but it's all from the atmosphere around us, like the people around us. Maybe sometimes a single smile or a friendly hello would be enough for us.
Okay, and I'm just going to wrap up with a few ideas about directions for future research or action. The experiences of newcomers in smaller cities is an under-researched area at this point, But as more and more immigrants migrate to smaller cities and the patterns of migration change, smaller cities need to learn how to adapt to these changes in a manner that is inclusive and welcoming to newcomers. So one way we could move towards doing that is by researchers, newcomers, and community agencies working together to explore the experiences of newcomers and developing programs that can enhance the social supports that are available. So regardless of whether the immigrant is male or female, a youth or adult, visible minority or not, I think it's really important to explore what kind of social supports we can create. Also, I think it's really, really important to explore different ways of enhancing the communication between Canadian-born individuals and newcomers. And challenging the conceptions of Canada as a white country is really imperative. It's one thing to have services like that are provided by the New Canadian Centre to support newcomers, but getting, you know, more of the Canadian-born population involved and sort of learning more about, okay, how do you create a welcoming and inclusive community, right? Also, to developing anti-racism strategies and education tools at all levels of education. So, starting from elementary school, secondary school, post-secondary, it's really necessary as a means of combating discrimination and racism in Canadian society. Now, this is somewhat of a contentious issue because people have a really hard time talking about racism and discrimination. But it's not only the students of the institutions that need to learn how not to discriminate, but it's staff, faculty, and administration as well. And I think we all need to improve and enhance our cultural competency skills and explore ways of doing that together. And that is it. So if anyone has questions, we will do our best to try and answer them. Or if you want to talk after, not in front of the group, that's fine too. So, yes.
I'd be very interested. Sites where negative experiences were encountered.
Well, it
and
was
positive ones.
Yeah, it was more of a general feeling that they were more exposed in the downtown area, especially if, say, there were bars around. Almost all of the participants sort of avoided those kinds of areas, but it was downtown areas in general, whether it was Kingston or Peterborough, whether it was Peterborough or Kingston, right? Like, it was the sense that, okay, there was more people milling about, so therefore maybe a perpetrator of a racist comment felt that it was a safer place to, you know, sort of say something negatively to a passerby.
Was there different times of the day in different parts of the city, or was that something that you covered?
Well, we did talk a little bit about like the time of day, and of course there were certain areas that women would not go to after dark, parks and secluded areas being those places, which I think is generally true for anyone, you know, you sort of know, okay, you don't go into the park at midnight, right?
Yeah.
This one?
No, the other one.
The other one.
Duray. This one?
Yeah.
No.
City.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a Tim Hortons.
And that would be the same as the one south of
the southern part. That was, I think, you mean this one right here?
Yeah.
That's also a Tim Hortons?
No, that's, I think it was, that one was the grocery store. That was the grocery store. So at certain, this person had, and I think is there a bank near there? I know the grocery store was identified as being like where this person felt uneasy because of, you know, I think it had more to do with like the language, the challenges with language and sort of being made to feel sort of inadequate because of, that one? That green place, well, that was, that was like also downtown, but it was just having had general good experiences there. Like different people identified different places according to whether or not they had positive experiences. But some of them, like the Long Green bar, was like the waterfront and along the park.
And then Sherbrooke Street.
Sherbrooke Street was something more like timing of day. It was identified, and that was kind of an interesting experience in the focus group because there were a couple of participants were like that were really surprised, like, oh really, you're not supposed to walk here at, you know, like at night. So it was a good opportunity for some of the newer immigrant women to sort of learn, okay, well maybe you need to think twice about the places that you go. Sorry? The one at the top? I think that, you know, that was more the general downtown feeling, and maybe I positioned it a little bit too high in this, have I?
The bus station, maybe.
No, it wasn't the bus station, no. No, more so with the buses and the bus stops. Because there were, yeah, because if there was a lone visible minority person standing at the bus stop, sometimes the bus just goes by, right? So in Miao's case, she was actually, you know, she was approaching the bus stop, she was almost there. And I think one of the excuses I've heard was that, well, she wasn't technically at the bus stop, so therefore the bus stop driver didn't have to stop, right? But then there were other people who came forward saying, well, you know, I was standing at the bus stop, or my husband was standing at the bus stop, and he was the only one there, and the bus just went by. So it is something that, you know, that happens, I don't know how frequently, but it does happen. This is sort of exhibited, it didn't mean at night. This was like in general, at any time of the day.
And I reiterate that those are all the streets. Areas during the
yeah,
day as well.
Yeah.
They're kind of lower income areas and they are a bit rougher.
Well, I think a lot of the experiences that women had who were connected to their visible minority status. They were being called racist names.
So that, I guess that's just specifically, I was looking
yeah.
for that
yeah.
they were being called racist names.
Yeah, we've all had bad experiences with different things, but when it's, you know, like it's, you're targeted because you're a visible minority, I think it crosses the line.
And that's the evidence that they were specifically targeted because they're a minority, not necessarily because they're a woman.
Right.
Because it is that it's just that they're an intersex.
But I think your study isn't saying, you didn't ask the women, tell me the places where you felt vulnerable because you're an immigrant woman that wouldn't have applied to someone who was a male immigrant
or
a non-immigrant woman. You're just saying...
We're looking at experiences, and what kind of experiences have you had in different places? Like, how do different places make you feel, right? And so when women would expand on why they felt good in the place or fearful or vulnerable, it was a lot of the time connected to the fact that they had people either saying derogatory racist comments, or they had been like sort of centered out because of their accent or maybe because of how they're dressed.
In terms of the instances of discrimination that happened on buses, was it pretty much equal, or how many of those happened in Peterborough? I'm just wondering how prevalent it is in our city. Because it was overall outlined that it was Kingston and Peterborough.
Yeah, it was, yeah, well, there was 7 women who regularly took the bus, and 6 of the 7 women had either experienced or witnessed more than one incident of discrimination.
In Peterborough?
No, 6 out of 7 in between the two.
Oh, six. How many were from Peterborough?
Yeah, I'm just going to get to that. Yeah, so there were two women in Peterborough who had commented. So there were 5 then, or 4 in Kingston.
I think listening to some of the comments around the bus, and I take the bus, and I think it's a part of our infrastructure that we should be proud of in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah, basic human rights, I think.
But moving to your parting comment about solutions, I'm with the city. My department is responsible for most city facilities, including social services. And one of the pilot projects we're working on right now is to take the city's code of conduct policy, which was originally developed for staff in their interactions with one another, but to make sure that the code of conduct is applied to all clients as well. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it as a pilot project in social services. It's being developed in keeping with a focus group of clients in social services. And it basically states that everyone that city staff work with have the right to be treated with respect, the right not to be threatened, the right not to be sworn at or yelled at, or any of those other kinds of negative things. Mm-hmm. The other piece of that that is very important is that we're also developing a process so that if someone, we've got two issues in social services. Somebody can come in and in working with staff on their particular problem, they can complain about the process. And we have a mechanism to deal with concerns about process. With this, what we're working on is how they are treated as a separate issue. And we have created a form that we will be testing. Like one of the first thing that people say is, I was yelled at, I didn't know who to complain to or how to complain. So we're creating a process. If individuals don't feel comfortable doing that themselves, we encourage them to get an advocate, somebody who can speak for them. And that process will be taken seriously. If a form is submitted, then we've given the senior manager in social services a set period of time to investigate the complaint and take the appropriate action. So we're treating this as a pilot within social services, but we do envision that this will be applied to all city services eventually.
Excellent.
So, but as a senior manager, one of the biggest challenges I have is that people, when they have negative experiences, they put up with it. They don't tell anyone about it. And then all of a sudden something happens that really hits close to home, or they're having a bad day, and all of a sudden they complain, but then with that specific complaint comes 15 years of harassment and inappropriate treatment. So one of the things that I need to make decisions to affect change is when people have a bad experience, report it. Because then we can take specific action. If we don't have specific information, it's awfully hard
to take action. I think that's one of the. Sorry?
Do you have a complaint or a complaint? Do you use the budget?
Yes, we do have complaint mechanisms. We have, in social services, we're also implementing a feedback process so that people can put stuff up on bulletin boards that staff have to respond to whatever the issues or concerns are. And we are trying to formalize a process so that people can identify inappropriate treatment by my staff.
With respect to that, are you concerned, Linda, that it's an internal process? As someone who needs honest assistance, if I identify a worker to their direct boss, I'm left with the fear that I can get cut off. So there's like an intimidation by
Well, and one of the things that you identify is that, as I said before, there's two processes. Two channels. One is if you don't feel that you're getting what you deserve, then there is a formal appeal process. Part of that is legislated by the province that you go through. This deals with how you're being treated as an individual. If one of my staff yells at you, or if you have reason to believe that they're threatening, Your complaint doesn't go to their manager. Your complaint goes to the manager of the social services division. So it goes right to the top of that infrastructure, and they investigate the complaint. it's not perfect by any means, but in the past there was no mechanism for you to identify what you might have felt was inappropriate in terms of how you were treated as an individual. And that's what we're trying to come to grips with. You should be able to challenge process without feeling that by challenging you're going to lose that service.
Kingston can learn from that. There's that's one of the problems with the lack of an appropriate complaint structure at the city of Kingston right now. I think they're working on implementing something new, but
one other thing that everyone should understand is that complaints are taken seriously and we do take actions, but to protect the rights of my staff, I can't tell you what those actions are. So I can't come back and say that person's been disciplined, that person's been fired. That's protecting their rights.
So then how is one to know if it's working?
Well, no, we do report back
okay.
That action has been taken.
Okay.
But I can't report back on the specific actions that have been taken.
Against a specific individual.
A specific
okay.
Individual.
So you could say at the end of the year, okay, this many actions were taken, it just not located.
We've received this many complaints,
okay.
We've taken these actions.
Yeah.
These are some changes that we've made to our process or to our systems.
Can you say
we're still very new in the process.
When would this all happen?
It's in the works right now.
Would it be? It hasn't been.
It hasn't been implemented
though.
Yet. No.
But when do you see this happening?
As I say, this is a pilot that we're working on. We, like any pilot, we will be testing it. We're just about the final stage of the written code of conduct, for want of a better word. We've got to do the testing. So it will. It will be certainly in place within social services before the. Parts of it are in place now.
Will you be doing does that official name that it should be?
Not at this stage.
No. And will you be doing will you be alerting us all? Will you be alerting the media?
I probably won't be alerting the media what we will be doing because our focus is on our clients.
So would you have like some kind of way for clients who come to access the services to know, okay, if
yes.
you're mistreated, this
yes.
is where you go?
And that will be when it's fully in place, that will be on our website. There will be brochures. It will be on our bulletin board.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
we're working on all of the pieces. Right now, it's still, what are the concerns? What are the issues? Does this mechanism address the issues?
Photographs?
The photographs.
Yes.
You have, yeah, and you have 4 inches when the people is going with the immigrants. My immigrants are going to the Ministry of Transportation for license, the terrible discrimination there, and the other places specific. You don't say now, but it's very, very interesting when we see all the places where they are
right.
suffering.
Yes. There's some posters out there that have some of the photographs on them. I couldn't put all of them on posters. I would have posters. I'd have the New Canadian Centre wallpapered with posters, but you know.
And we also use some of the pictures as the background of the slides.
Yeah, all the photographs in the slideshow were from the project. So.
I was thinking in the last words, because you say now they have hope, they have the women knows what happened, what will be the mechanism for to improve this situation, and maybe it's more organization, women organization, women need to be in campaigns doing different things. For example, this word minorities is discrimination also, because nobody is majority or perfection or
whatever. Oh, you mean the term visible minority is problematic?
Yeah, the word is the problem also, because native are not minority, because they are not blonde and blue eyes, no? I think we need to change all of the superstructure, the infrastructure. We need to change everything, and maybe it's with the women organizations. And Michael knows more about this problem because he's a specialist. And we, every day, here in Peterborough, in Kingston, in Toronto, in every place, in my country also, women need to be organized, because this fighting, or I don't know the other word, for to be more simple, for equality, for to be respectful, is not finished.
No, it's an ongoing, I think gaining
laws,
respect is an ongoing.
Exactly, because the
struggle.
Laws are machistas. You know, when the people here, I saw the cases, when they have children assault, you girls, as sexual assault, the complaint is in the court, long time the process, and they go free, because there are not horrible things happening, no, a lot of blood, etc. It's terrible, because it's the laws, the society is almost very good, no, because it's the first world, but it's not the perfection, because we need to be more stronger women, more and more, and to do everything, because it's not favor to women. It's a society, it's like this, no, it's not, there are not a perfect equilibrium. We need to
Well, I think that's, you know, one of the basic things that this project was about is facilitating an opportunity for women to have a voice. And so
exactly.
I think that would be a nice note to sort of end it on, that we should all, you know, have an equal voice in society. I think we all need to be able to take the time to listen to. So, thank you very much. If there's any other questions, we'll be around for a little bit, so you can approach me. Feel free. Thank you.